Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 187, which we recorded when I was in Bulgaria. Liz is a special guest today. She was in Bulgaria with us, right? That was the last time we saw each other.
Total chaos, yeah.
Total chaos. And it was our friends at Brick. Do you remember the guys from Brick? They were a Hungarian visual archivist company.
Okay.
And I've met them a couple of times. First time I think I met them was at D2 and no, IMARC, which was in Venice. And then I met them again in Vienna. Really, really creative company. We talked with Peter, Attila, and Andras from that company. And because of my Hungarian roots, he brought in some palinka, and so we were drinking, which is a Hungarian brandy, and we were having some plum brandy well then. So since Liz is visiting from Baltimore, and she's my HR person, so I'm not going to get in trouble for drinking palinka during the podcast, am I?
No. We're keeping it clean.
We're keeping it clean. Yeah, no, it's hard to keep it clean sometimes. It was a really great podcast, and they've been really good fans of the podcast itself. And they've also been really incredible in terms of the work they do in ArcViz, as well as some of the technology that they drive forward. So that's why they were really great guests to have at the event at Total Chaos. And it was the last one I recorded there, I know. When was it when we were in Sofia? Was it?
May.
Okay, so it has been a while.
May 2018.
Yeah, okay, so it has been a while. But anyway, this is the last one from Total Chaos. I think you guys will enjoy it. But we have a couple of announcements to make. First is Liz is visiting us from Baltimore.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just flew in today.
It's my second visit to L.A. I hope to see a little bit more of the city this time around.
Good. Yeah, because you're staying more. Once you came in the morning and you left in the evening, you never even stayed the night.
It was a really, really long day.
Yeah. Yeah, you crossed the entire United States twice in one day. That's pretty badass. Yeah.
Luckily, they were both nonstop flights. But.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. This was not a nonstop flight so far,
it
right?
It was supposed to be a nonstop flight. We had technical difficulties and landed in Denver, so it turned into a long flight.
Terrible. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to enjoy some of Los Angeles when you're here.
Yeah.
Now, one of the reasons you're here is that we have a bunch of new employees, including Kristen, who's joining us.
Hi.
How are you? And listen, it's been really great so far. Kristen has been coming to the office, and one of the new tasks that she has that I'm extremely excited about is she's going to help us with figuring out how to restructure and redecorate our office, because we've had this furniture for a long time. And I'm very excited about the fact that this podcast room, she and I have been looking at some new designs and ideas for it. I'm really excited. We're going to find a new table.
Yeah.
You excited about that?
I am.
Good.
Love it.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other things. What are you looking forward to in your new job?
Well, I think just structuring my role here.
Yeah.
And being a big part of chaos.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's fun when you have a role that no one else has had before. Yeah. You can kind of make it your own.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like my job.
Exactly. it's like, hey, talk to amazing people.
Yeah.
Make a job of that.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's fun. And I'm really excited about Kristen here. That one of the first things, she reorganized the fridge on the first day, and it looks amazing. I took a picture, and I said to my wife, like, I already love this person. This is amazing.
Skills you didn't know.
Yeah, no, these are skills that have become important for sure.
And how do you interview for that skill? We're trying to figure that out.
But. Well, she didn't need to. She did a really good job. All right, I do have a couple of announcements for our listeners in terms of some of the things that are coming with Chaos Group. One is V-Ray Cloud. As some of you guys may know, we announced earlier that V-Ray Cloud beta is out. What that actually means is we're actually giving out free cloud credits for people who want to try to use it. And one of the big things we are doing with cloud is we're making it extremely simple for people to use. So if you want to get out there and try to render enormous amount of work for free, we are giving you the credits to do that, right? So I think we're giving 1,000 credits for people to do that. And if you guys need more, let us know, and maybe we'll probably be able to give you some more as well. The big thing that we are looking for is feedback and letting us know how it works, what the experience is like, where there's problems, where you'd like improvements. And the more you get us feedback on cloud, the better it'll be. And it's what I always like about new products, especially in betas, is that it's your chance to turn the product that you want to to have. So really give us that feedback, and that's what's going to be very important. All right, guys, thanks so much. And hopefully you will enjoy this great podcast with our good friends from Brick. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray.
Okay.
Have you guys heard the
bass
light? Yes, what? Yeah. Last time we traveled back from FMX everything on the German Autobahn on 200 kilometers per hour, and we decided to run through the Star Wars podcast series.
That's a lot. That's like 5 hours.
Yeah. So great.
And also the Austrian police decided to give a penalty for these guys.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I'm glad you guys are fans. And I know that you must be fans because you brought me some palinka to have during the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah.
You guys have heard I usually drink whiskey, but this goes back to half of my roots, which is my Hungarian roots, and it's really awesome that you guys are here from Hungary and can do some palinka. Last time I drank that, it was my sister's wedding, which was in Hungary. We did it in Hungary.
So,
okay,
please.
So let's see what this is. This is, Mateusz, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mateusz?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. And it's plum flavored, which is very
mm-hmm.
nice.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the original, no?
This is the original one?
Plum.
Plum is the original one.
Yeah.
There's like also the cherry and pear.
Yeah.
Right. But plum is the good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my mother, I will make her listen to this podcast.
And sorry for this, because I don't like palinka, actually. I like much better whiskey, but now we have to drink it. So.
you have to, yes. I like whiskey too, but palinka is, it's like memory, you know? And my mother always used to do it, you know, when we would have dinner or something, we'd have a nice dinner and everything. And she goes, after dinner, she goes, you want a little. So that's his.
I remember when I was a kid, we traveled to Romania.
Uh-huh.
And we had some relatives there because lots of Hungarians living in Romania.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
And I think I was like 8 years old. And in the morning, I had the shot on my table too. You know, for the kids.
So this is also what my mother was telling me. She would have, when you lived on the farm, like the farmers, it was cold out. So before going to work, you had some bread with some salona on top of it, right?
Yeah.
And an onion, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm getting this right, right?
Yes.
And then a shot of palinka to stay warm. Yeah. And this is for breakfast.
Yeah. We're doing the same thing nowadays, but we switched the bread to cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger, okay, great. And I'm not going to do shots because I'm going to enjoy this flavor. We're going to do it as a sipping. All right, let's see. Attila's got one now. Peter, here you go.
Thank you.
When was the first time that we guys that we met? Was it a D2 or we met? No, I think it was.
I think it was last year at Imar.
Oh, Imars, that's right.
Yeah.
That was before D2. Yes.
Yeah.
So we were at Imars, which was a really good event. I liked the Imars. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys, so let's start with that. Let's start with the fact that you guys are a Hungarian-based company that's been doing a lot of incredible visualization, but also because of the immersive things, you're really focused on some technology stuff. How did that come about? How did you start the company? Let's go with that.
I think we started in 2012, like 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can tell that we had this,
oh, this is
crazy.
Cheers.
I guess
I can drink.
I guess you got that.
Cheers.
Now, I know also at the end of Egeshagada, you have to, you guys have to cheers.
Oh.
there you go. The end of the word, it depends on who you are talking to.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So you have to be, so my mother says, whenever you're not sure, you just go Egeshagada. So, okay, 2012.
Yeah. So I could say that we were like had this strategy or that, but of course we were naive. We, you know, I was freelancing for a while before, and at the time we just wanted to do a company. You know, we had two choices at that time in Hungary. It was middle of crisis in Hungary, financial crisis.
Right.
So we had kind of two choices: go out somewhere, find a job, or try to make our own thing and try to work from Hungary to anywhere else, just not on the Hungarian market because there was no market basically.
Right.
And I decided to move out. That's how it started. But no. And then my wife said that she's pregnant, so I decided to stay.
Okay.
So and then I found in a little bit tricky way Attila. Mm-hmm. We met at around that time, 2011. Yeah, actually, I hired you in a small startup company.
Yeah.
And then we left that company and we started this
thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, like three of us and basically it was a quite quick increase immediately. We found some sales guys in different countries who was willing to represent us. We already put together quickly a portfolio from our earlier work freelancing job. Yeah. And at that time we didn't know, but we were really lucky. We started in a good time. The place Hungary, Budapest especially, was a really good place to find good artists.
Yeah.
Because of the crisis, lots of architects, you know, had to change their profession. They already started to look for options as an architect. What is the obvious choice if you are a young architect but you don't have job or you don't have enough? You're doing architectural visualization. And therefore we found quickly good guys. Quite quickly actually. So yeah,
they're still
working with us, so most of them, and that's basically the core of Brick still.
You mentioned you had some salespeople, right? That's starting. What was your sales pitch? What made your company what it was? Like, how, what was your market? What were you going for?
Actually, we didn't have that much really intelligent strategy at that time. The only thing what we could offer to our clients is basically a quite good quality of visualization, not that good quality what we have now, but a good quality visualization. And of course at that time our biggest advantage was the price level, what we could offer from Budapest, because of course in the Eastern European region, it's not true anymore, but at that time it was kind of good. Affordable, and that was a good combination.
So were you working were you representing companies within Hungary, or were you working, you know, for Hungarian companies, or were you looking mostly to support?
We are not working in Hungary.
Just for abroad.
Just for abroad. But so that was like from the beginning.
So where are your customers coming from?
Right now, all over the world. At that time, we started from in USA.
Really?
And we catch some good references there. So, for example...
So who were your customers that you were going... Yeah.
Developers and architects.
That
was the most...
So, for example, there was a funny story in the very beginning. And it leads back to the question that how can we deal with the clients? It was a situation when reached us that, okay, guys, I would like to make an animation about a building in Manhattan, which should be 15 minutes long without any cuts. And that guy reached...
You know how I feel about this, right?
Yeah. that guy reached the D-Box and the Piranha, but they refused him.
Was it because...
Because of the impossible request of him.
Right. And probably at a price.
Technically impossible. Yeah, yeah. And on the other hand, the price might be high. So, again, a little part of luck and a little part of conscious decisions, because we immediately said yes, but we didn't know
how to do it.
How to deal with this task. So
that's the risk management, right?
Yeah. It is.
No, that's the risk, not management. Okay.
But we learned a lot on that project. For example, it was great to deal with it.
And but also at the beginning, if you remember, we catched some really interesting stuff in one of the World Trade Center towers. We could do a office building interior, and it's really funny because, you know, we were like a starting company from Hungary, and we catch that random project in one of the World Trade Center towers, and it was like, wow.
Yeah, that's a great project. Must have been. So you were able to pull that off. How long did it take to do that project?
The long movie.
Yeah,
I think
1 year.
One year.
And In the end, we produced, we counted a couple of years later that we produced 45 minutes animation.
Right. Yeah.
Because this guy, he's an architect as well, but he's like investing money in this and he owns this development.
Right.
He actually, during this process, just imagine you render out final sequences and then he said, okay, change this, and now the architecture is changed, so we are again rendering. So you can imagine how much we spend on render farms to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. So you guys did a lot of your renderings on render farms at that point?
At that point.
Do you guys hadn't invested in your own render farms at this point a little bit?
Yeah.
A little bit in both. Okay. Well, that's great. That's a good project. Trial by fire, as they say in the United States, where you just, you know, go into the fire at full speed and see how it's going to work. But that's ambitious. Mm-hmm. It's ambitious for a first project. But I guess you learned a lot, right, during that year.
Yeah, I think in the first year and the second year, it was a big learning curve, and quickly we the reason why I think we had some good opportunities and we managed to fulfill these opportunities. And from that point, when you have the chance to learn good things, your learning curve is exponential.
Yeah.
And that happened. And the addition that we were not old, we were naive enough to do this, like full power, 24 hours sometimes.
Yeah. Thank you for the vibes.
That must have been I think that's probably one of the things that's true, right? I mean, the other studios are more mature studios and they're like, no, we know that it's going to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys were naive enough to say, sure, let's do it, and we start a company. But you come out of that process really well, you know, crafted, learning all this process, doing all those things, and being able to do it, which is really cool. But you started with animation. You guys do a lot of animation, right, at this point?
Back and forth. Nowadays, I would say 80% image production, 20%
animation,
and 5% VR. So it's altogether
105%.
But that's the overtime.
Yeah, that's good. So that's really cool. But I do want to sort of get into how you guys jumped into technology, because I think that's something that is very interesting about what you guys have done, is you focused on how you can start doing things in an innovative way. And that's certainly what I was seeing when I went to Immerse, that you guys have really embraced that as something that's really good. So what tell me about some of the technology and how that influenced the early days of the company.
I started like 5 years ago there, but I was hired as a normal 3D artist.
Okay.
Nothing special at all. I was handling Max, V-Ray, maybe no Photoshop skills. So I was just doing these type of animations. Actually, my first project was this, tower.
Everyone's project. Yeah. First project. Yeah.
What is the name of the project? Can you talk?
Skybox.
Skybox Tower. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have it? Is it online?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's available. But it's not. There is no big marketing around it because it's still on hold for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, really? Why. So still after all these years?
But it's the Chelsea area.
In Chelsea. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because it'd be interesting to, if there's an anime, if you're able to share the animation, it'd be good to put it in the notes or something. We can show people.
It's really ugly.
Exactly. People need to know what it looked like at the beginning, right? Because if the people can be inspired by the fact that it's like, oh, here's where you started and here's where you go and how much you've learned. So
that's what we did, actually. We have a lot of colleagues right now, and we have an in-house system for sharing information. I mean, a workplace, and we just posted that old video to the others to see where
what was started. Yeah, what was the,
you know, we have this throwback Thursday, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so your first project was on the Skybox.
The Skybox. And then we did a couple of animations for offshore projects, if I remember. And then we did for a year these crazy build-up projects, like we had to animate how they will build a certain development, towers and shopping malls, and so it was crazy deadline, and it was highly technical.
Wow.
So we managed to get through him, and then I think what I know, the knowledge or the know-how that I have around these things was I learned everything from those projects, basically. So I think that was the time that we really learned how to handle these projects. And so from continuing from them, I think another year I spent with like normally image production, and then slowly I started to get interesting into scripting. So I learned Mac script, and then it was a really good experience that while I was learning it, I could actually use it for daily basis when I was working in the office. And it was really helpful for myself and for the office also. And this thing just shifted towards like
your focus.
Yeah.
What I find interesting, a lot of artists that sort of get into programming or get into scripting, usually very good because they understand both sides of the story. But I find that most of them do it because they get really frustrated. And they're like, this is not good. And I can't, I'm annoyed by how inefficient this is, so I'm going to make things better. And I think that's something that's very true. I had a friend of mine, he got a job at a bank, and it was a horribly boring job where he had to enter data like manually into the bank system. This was years ago. And he learned how to program. So he pretty much made a program that made his job obsolete so that he could quit and not feel guilty. but then he decided we're going to hire you to do more stuff like that. But yeah, I'm sure that was the thing, right? You saw inefficiencies that you could solve, right?
Yeah. And this was the first time that while I was learning, it was really important because learning coding, I think, in school is not that easy. I learned like for 2 years in high school. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. It was because of the teacher, you know. And it
makes a big difference, right?
And the type of projects that you need to do in these school classes are just not from real life examples. And while I was learning on my own, I always had a goal. Okay, I want to solve this.
Right.
And then that was easier. If I solved it, then everybody was, I was really happy. And then you can go further and improve it. And this was, I think it was a good combination.
I think it's, you're right, it's very important, because I also did, when I first started in college, I actually started as there was a special major they had, which was math and computer science. But my computer science teachers were, I didn't like them. They were boring, and we're sitting there timing cycles and like just really not creative. And I, you know, people like you and I, or all of us, I think, have a creative, unless we're feeding that creative mind where we're making something that's opposed to timing cycles. It's boring. So I left and I ended up becoming an art major, but I kept the math part because I thought the math was creative. And so I kept the math part, and then I left, I put the art part in there. But I think it's really important to have that teacher and that mentorship. That's important. And you can find it. You can find it in people. I mean, I know I find it when I speak to Vlado, for example. I don't learn how to code from Vlado because I can't code anymore, but I learn about ideas that come from code or things like that. So So okay, so you started and that became your thing, right? You became the guy who did that.
Yeah, and then I think there was another half a year or a year that halfly I was working on in production, and the other half of
was
the
16.
Day.
16.
2016?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other half of the day was about coding, or the week. So it was splitted.
Right.
And then, now it's just coding. And then we formed this little R&D group inside the office. So
you, what's the R&D group? Explain a little bit what you do there. And what's it called, first of all? Do you have it a name, or you just
no,
call it R&D?
No,
it's just an R&D.
It's an R&D group. It's a Bricks internal R&D group. So yeah.
Right.
So the original idea was to do something different. I mean, concentrate on that kind of activities which basically help us in Brick Visual to enhance the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, from the very beginning, we felt that, okay, we have a relatively big company, I mean, on the field of architectural visualization,
mm-hmm.
but if we are dealing something which is R&D-ish,
mm-hmm.
Then it has to come up in the end with some product which can be good for others as well, and it's
okay.
We have to find a balance that how much time and money we spend on in-house increasement and how much time we spent on those things which are not good for Brick directly,
okay.
but good for everybody on the market and in this kind of common self-developing, we can be better and better.
So your R&D group is not just for internal purposes?
No.
So you guys are thinking about products and services and ideas that can serve even your competitors.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So right now we are working closely with multiple competitors of ours.
Wow.
And architectural offices as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of things, to explain some of the services you guys are doing in this area.
You mean the research and development?
Yeah, the research. Mm-hmm.
Basically the thing is, but I think Peter can describe it in a little bit more detailed way. But the main idea is that we have some developments in with all of the developments starting as an in-house one, because we figured out that okay, we have some processes which are struggling and we hate them mm-hmm. to do them, so iterating tasks and we would like to have some solution which deals with these iterating crap of shit.
Right, yeah.
So it's sure that everybody else has the same experience with these kind of iterating things.
Yep.
Therefore, we made very good products for in-house, and to make it even better, we needed to have experience from outside Brick, because we see only one kind of approach or several kind of approaches, mm-hmm. but not all of them. Therefore, we decided to work together other architectural visualization offices.
So is it more an open source idea?
Not
open source in a way that I'm not putting up the code to GitHub or anything like that. It's more like we are at the phase that we are slowly finishing up these things. I think in the next coming weeks or months, we will put them up and everybody can buy it, actually. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
But people can contribute back to you.
Sure, they can share ideas. They can, you know, comment on it and things like that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so it's not really open source, but you're leveraging from the knowledge of the community that can help solve these problems, mm-hmm. right? So, what are some of the products you said? I know you guys have been doing stuff in the VR world,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Is that one of the main things that you guys are doing R&D at the moment?
The first thing that we started it is that we needed to solve our render management. When the office was growing, then we need to solve somehow that who's using which PCs what are you rendering and things like that.
The first solution was that we bought a huge TV,
okay,
mounted on the wall, and everybody on the office was able to catch which computers are used at the very moment.
Was this for distributed rendering?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And everybody was shouting in the air that, I want to use those computers, please give it to me, and these kind of things. So that that television was the first solution for distributed rendering. But it was
horrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Then we started to do figure out how to deal with this in a efficient way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it went through, like, I think we had like 4 or 5 versions since today. And now it's a complete solution that can deal with distributed rendering, animations, batch rendering, and all kinds of things.
Interesting.
In a way,
but specifically to deal with distribution.
not just distribution, any kind of render management. So it's a complex solution.
So you submit jobs.
That's
and
where I was
like
going
to
get at, because basically, you know, you could have, I mean, you weren't necessarily dealing with render management, because then you could say, oh, I'll just buy Deadline or something like that, right? But you started with a problem that Deadline couldn't solve.
Yes, and that time we do not had the money for by Deadline, to be honest. And but on the other hand, we had different approach as Archviz guys,
right?
And from the very beginning, we realized that those kind of solutions which are available on the market are not good for those artists who we are working with, and it's an issue.
Right.
It's basically UI UX issue,
right?
And and we realized that that's something what we have to focus on.
Okay,
and basically that was the first kind of thing when we realized that, you know, this whole architecture visualization is so a newborn baby.
It's different.
Lack of lots of things, lack of standards, but lack of tools as well. Because, you know, we as ArcWiz guys are not, you know, we won't use the things what, for example, the VFX industry using in, and not that deep for sure.
Right.
We need easier tools. We need easier tools. This is quicker, get to the point. And I think this render node manager system is a good example for that. That Deadline for an ArcWiz guy is too complex. You need someone who is, you know, handling that and this kind of, that's just problematic. Nowadays we're running pools on many computers without problem. How much support you give to the guys, like on weekly basis? How many hours?
Like, I don't know. An hour maximum
per week.
Right.
So if there is a technical issue, that's it. You need much more if you run Deadline.
Right.
And then we realized that there are many things what we could improve actually with different developments, and this is why we did the C manager, which is handling different camera setups in 3D Max, but it will be soon multi-platform. And then we realized that this is probably not, you know, our clients are mostly architects nowadays.
Okay, and not developers.
No, not really.
That's interesting. That's a different...
Yeah. And we realized that probably they would be really interesting in these easy tools as well.
No.
But they are not working on 3D Max, so this is why we started to develop these softwares in a way which they can be multi-platform and compatible with SketchUp or Rhino or Revit or AutoCAD.
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but we have a solution to it. We were trying to come up because we have a similar, our own customers had the same complaint. They didn't necessarily have access to your tool, but we thought about that too, and we knew the inefficiencies of distributed rendering when you're dealing with that. When DR, as an example, is your one of the main things that you guys use for render management is not working. You have to create a better solution. So that's why we made V-Ray Swarm. For
yeah.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys looked at that, if it works in your solution. You probably have your own solution that works, but you know, Swarm is another thing that we offered. And it's true. The reason Swarm came about is the same reasons that you outlined. ArcViz people don't want to have to sit there and think about script management, you know, dependencies. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't. You want to say
a lot of buttons. They are not kind of
buttons are not. Yeah, they're for clean interface, like one button. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you guys have done that as well, which is cool. So that was one of the first things. Obviously, it's a very obvious tool that you guys need to solve, right? Distribution. Mm-hmm. But then, what was some of the other ones you came up with?
I think this is the main tool, and then the other ones are kind of built around it, just to help like job submission, the sanity check things before you submit. So for now, the main idea is to solve this issue around rendering for at-risk companies or for architects. I think the other big chunk of what we do is AR VR stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So back in 2016, we contacted the guys from SOM and from Boots Bagot, Imark, exactly.
Yeah.
They were super interested, and they implemented this whole software family to their pipeline.
Okay.
And we learned a lot with their help and their support. So we super grateful for them because that was a huge boost for us to. There is a goal over here which we might reach in later on, because we strongly believe that somehow the how we are working as an architectural visualizators is right now too much isolated. I mean, it's not just about delivering an image. It's about providing a service.
Yes,
working together with the architects and figure out how can we do something better. And
I was going to mention that because you guys mentioned how you guys are very much in the working much more with architects than developers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're doing that, that means you are becoming more integral to the design process.
Yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a conscious strategic decision around 2015. Mm-hmm. When we had this mixed portfolio with developers and architects, and we realized that, first of all, everyone in Brick, basically. Yeah, give me one.
Everyone in Brick, go ahead.
Okay. Everyone in Brick mostly has architect backgrounds. So, okay. I can say also that most of us still think partly as an architect, like Attila and me definitely thinks we are proud architects as well.
Yeah,
so.
I know. Well, I mean...
You are also.
I am, but I mean, I'm not an architect really anymore. But what I do believe is that my architecture background and my history and especially my education has contributed to a lot of what has made me the person I am today.
Yeah. Yes.
You know? And even if I'm not necessarily a licensed architect that's making buildings and on the construction site and checking things, which I don't think you guys are doing either.
I am an art degree in architecture.
Right, exactly. But what you're doing is you are that philosophy of the architecture education, which I know it's universal, where you don't take anything, nothing is too precious. You know, if you design it and then you don't like it, you can throw it away and start over again. You know, you do all these things where you iterate and nothing is precious and you can think about things and collaborate. And you know that a design is not just internal, it works with other people together. All of that is part of your architecture education.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then that's, I think, how you probably, and if you communicate that way with an architect, he's going to be more receptive, or she.
Yeah, so this is basically in 15 we said that we should focus on this because we love good architecture, we like good architecture, and we're more interested in doing this thing not for marketing purposes, but more like, I called it design communication purposes.
Design communication,
okay. That's a nice word.
Yeah, that's a nice word.
And I think it really quickly proved prove that this strategy is good for Brick, because we are kind of like this person. So we, you know, we wanted to set up a vision which is compatible with the people who are inside the company.
Right.
And I think this is why we went in this direction. And now it's really matching with these R&D activities as well, because these tools will be used by architects as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good and, again, lucky yeah. setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. I think it's an interesting philosophy. It's what's interesting to me is that I've heard from a lot of architecture visualizations companies that have actually gone the other way. They work mm-hmm. more directly yeah. with developers, right? And the reason they work with developers is because they're part of the marketing team of yeah. that mm-hmm. of that building, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you guys made a choice in the, you know, that time where it's like, we'll work with the architects instead, because this is our route, and we become part of the communication process.
It's interesting what you're saying, because of course I don't know that well, and probably you have much better knowledge about this, but as I see, you know, if I look at the companies in these really high profile companies in architectural visualization,
mm-hmm.
Mostly they work with architects, and not everyone. I'm not right. talking about D-Box, and they are playing in another league, of course.
Sure.
but if I say like Mir, for example, sure. They are also just working with architects. I don't sure. know the reasoning why is that, but
well, I mean Mir, you know, you mentioned they all have their strengths, right? Mir's strengths is that they deliver like a ridiculously compelling image, right? Something yeah. that's going to sell the architecture, even if you don't even see the architecture, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not to dismiss them, because I think they're fabulous. I think mm-hmm. they're really, really good. But they, a company like Zaha Hadid, who's going to hire Amir to do mm-hmm. a rendering or an animation of whatever, they're mm-hmm. going to do it because they know that they're going to go into a competition, right? And they need to win that competition.
Yeah.
And the only way they're going to win that competition is if they get that image.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that that's not working with the architecture, but that's a marketing mm. position, right? They are marketing for the architect to win the competition.
Yeah, but that's where we, I mean, partly. So one of them is, of course, design communication is more complex. So
right.
following up the design changing, you know, mediate between the architect and the client with your visualization, blah, 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 this kind of, and during this process, design process
right.
is something what we really believe in. But in the other hand, yes, architects, I believe they need more and more marketing basically to communicate their design.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
just think about like in Corbusier, you know,
right.
the modern architecture born.
Right.
And from that point, being an architect was not just a pure engineering work or something, but much more art.
Yes.
And that was the first step. But if you look at the new modern architecture companies like Big or Snohatta,
mm-hmm.
they are not just any more good architects. Of course, they are really good architects.
Right.
They are a brand. You are,
yeah.
And from that point, it's just one thing that you are a good architect. Secondly, that you have a brand name. It's like a Nike shoes. You know, like
sure.
like nowadays, you're not Nike shoe is definitely good. I've never bought it, but
yeah.
I guess it's good. But now it doesn't matter anymore. You're buying Nike because it's Nike, and it's
right.
the same. We catch the moment when these modern architecture offices became actually brands.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can, you know, follow this logic and say that these brands need support, advertisement or marketing support,
right.
then we are probably can
we
contribute
yeah.
in
yeah.
this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my logic. I
like it. I think it's I think it's an interesting idea. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's just different than what I've heard, which I think is good, because if you're approaching it from a different philosophical point of view about that, as opposed to I'm going to help a developer sell a bunch of condos that are luxury condos that cost $6 million. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Some people really like that, right? Yeah. Some people really want to make beautiful living rooms, you know, or whatever it is, or marble bathrooms, right? And that's not that's I don't know. I was not necessarily interested. And I worked for Gensler for years, right? I've done a fair share of reception desk renderings. Right? So I know what it's like. I think there's a lot of interesting ways that you guys are looking at it where you feel that you're part of the architecture process, which is a nice way to look at it. It's a nice way to stay connected to architecture in a lot of ways. Now, I do still want to get into the VR stuff. So what are some of the things that you guys have discovered? You know, 2016 was right as the VR stuff was starting to like, oh, we all have to pay attention to this, right? And architecture was, in my mind, this is 2 years ago, everyone was ignoring architecture. And I say that's the number one place where VR needs to come from. Mm-hmm. Because the whole point of VR, now people acknowledge it, but back then people were looking at me like, what? And I said, no. VR is all about space. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do...
Immersive
thing. And then the best mm-hmm. people to know how to make space are architects and archivist people, right? So what was the nucleus and where you guys thought about it back then?
I think when the Gear VR came out.
The Gear VR, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. With Samsung S. six back then or something like that. That was no brainer. We want that. We bought it and we started experimenting with Unity.
Okay.
To build up some apps for the Gear VR. And I guess that was the start.
Okay. Did you guys look at the, back then we had the stereo cube maps. Did you guys look at that as a...
Of course. There were no content.
V-Ray
just came out. I'm not pretty sure which version, but you guys implemented the VR stripes.
Stereo cube map.
Yep. Yeah, so that was the first thing, and then we loaded up this image in, and also Construct came, and you guys had a few images.
Oh, the Construct image. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, those were the first impressions.
Okay,
and then. We started working on this Brick VR like viewer application for Samsung, and then that took spent a lot of time.
Yeah. Now, what was the point of that application? What were you trying to make with that?
It was basically just to prove that we can do it. And then, first of all,
I really like to hear this as a CEO. Small cost, going where exactly?
I like to prove that I can do it.
Therefore, I made another reason for that to say that okay, let's say that there were not enough good software solutions on the market. I mean,
there wasn't. You're right.
I mean, there are. Brilliant applications,
right?
When you can deal with your all of your content and you can make your own tour, etc., which is great. But in the point of view when we would like to work together with architects,
right?
They don't want to deal with tours and these kind of things. Yep. They would like to have some easy and
they just
want to
use it
and a nice solution which works.
Well, I'll tell you this, a little side story, but mm-hmm. right when that the reason one of those stereo cube maps came out, right, is because I needed a way for us to help our architecture clients do VR content, right? Mm-hmm. But very honestly speaking, and I think Vlada would agree with me, back then they were like, we're way too busy, mm-hmm. and there's lots of people saying we have this solution, but we don't know which one's going to be real and which one's going to go away. Different Gear VR, different headsets, different whatever. And it's like, why would we invest a bunch of time into a solution that's not going to work or whatever? So he said, let's just wait to see what happens. I said, okay. But, you know, one of our competitors came up with this Otoy, came up mm-hmm. with this format of stripe, you know, the striped mm-hmm. image, as you call it, more the stereo 360. It's like, how hard would it be to do that? And he goes, well, that's easy. That's just a lens shader. It's like, okay, great. Can we just do that just to hold us over for a little bit? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying that's the be all and end all, but like, just do that. And he goes, yeah, yeah, that's, you know, that's just like another lens shader. And, you know, like we would do a stereo or an unwrap thing. And then I talked to my friend, Justin Denton, about, you know, how do you deal with the poles? Because that's the problem, right? And so he's like, oh, yeah, this is how we do it. It's like, okay, cool, let's do that. And they made it, right? And it was so fast. The adoption was really fast. But then the problem was, how are you going to view it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just would like to go for it.
Okay. You need to take a break?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take a break. Oh, VR. Right. We're back on VR. Okay. I'll take a little side. So we'll go back to Hungary after this. But the okay, so there wasn't the many tools, right, that was available, and so that was one of the biggest things we had to teach people, like put it in this directory, do this, do that. There was no like nice place to look at things. Is that some of the things you guys were looking at, or other solutions to help architects and other people, right?
Yes, the solution that we have now or that we developed there is a tailor-made application. So we could gather the images from the client.
Yep.
We put it inside the application, we build it, and we will deal with the App Store and everything. Ah. So it's a different approach.
Yeah. So imagine that, okay, for example, Snow Hatton needs wants to try VR stuff and these kind of things. Mm-hmm. So we basically make a copy of our application and we do a Snow Hatton application for VR for different platforms. And then we can deliver the content, or they can also, we can implement the content as well. And then
so they just deal with it like any app from the App Store. Mm-hmm. Or something.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Now we if you go to the App Store, you can not the App Store but the Oculus Store, you can download this demo application from Brick VR.
Okay.
So in App Store as well.
Okay. But with cardboard.
Cardboard. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
And we tried it and we already sold it a couple of times. Now, still just for developers.
Right.
For specific projects, but. But lots of architects are really interested in this. Mm-hmm. So soon we will have some really nice implementation with you know, there will be a big VR application, there will be a Snow Hatton VR application, a Gensler application, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think that's really good that you're thinking about the solutions that these people need, right? They need to look at solutions that are easy to manage and use and... Yeah. It's not just the architects that needs them, it's the clients of the architects that need them, right? And so you give them a solution that works on that end as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. That's really cool. So is that some of the stuff that, you know, you were showing that at Immerse, right? Or
yes. Yeah. Back then we showed VR and I guess AR was not really a thing. Right. Like last year, it just boosted in the last couple of months.
Right.
Yeah.
We have to mention that again, we would like to dig deeper and find out some way how can we make it better. And therefore, for example, we figured out that, there are no solution for post-production of the stereoscopic VR images on the market.
There are,
but they are not so convenient, let's say, like that. We figured out that, we need our own solution for that. So we developed an in-house tool, which is basically an After Effects script, which deals with the VR stripes, and we can use... Because the thing is that... Over here at Brick, there are guys who are ArcVis guys. They know how to deal with Photoshop super solid way.
Right.
And they've got that kind of process and workflow how they deal with the different render elements, etc.
Right.
But if we would like to post-product the VR stripes,
right.
We have to... give the same kind of solution, the same kind of workflow to them,
right?
Because that's how they understand the
right,
the process. So that was the goal over here, and right now we have that kind of After Effects application.
And are you dealing with the stereo aspect as well?
Yeah, partly. So can, partially, we are over here to speak with some technical guys from your side, because there are some tricky issues which can be easily solved, I believe, whenever we would be able to talk with someone who knows the answer.
Okay.
So in the upcoming hours, we would like to...
But we're already using this for production.
Right.
It's not public yet, but actually if we can release this software...
Yeah, in the upcoming weeks it will be released, I hope. Yeah.
So people, where can I find all these tools?
Right now there are just two different websites where can you find these kind of tools. One of them is brickvisualvr.com, when older VR-related applications can be downloaded. And the other one is pulse.io, where the render management related things are not officially released yet, but the scene manager software is released as a beta, and you can sign
pool
up.
Pool spawner?
Sorry?
Pool spawner is what you call it?
Yeah, pools.
Pools.
Pools, the name of the software family, and right now the scene manager is available for everybody.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Now, you mentioned briefly, this as you AR, you were looking at some AR stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So what's going on in your AR world for you guys?
Oh, I think it's refreshingly more useful than some of the VR things.
Uh-huh.
And it's I think for now for normal users, it's a much better experience. Okay, we have this Pokemon Go and things like that that was partly using these kind of things.
Kind of.
But when it goes to top-notch phones now, or iPhone or iPad Pro and things like that, it's really easy to put these things together.
Right.
And yeah, so we have
historically, let's say that one day András, who has that kind of visionary approach, just appeared next to my...
So you're saying just do it to see if it works, Andrés? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You say, go ahead. You said you're doing it yourself, right?
He just appeared next to my desk and said, guys, we have to do that for Gensler.
Oh, right.
And we sat down and a month later, we had the AR app. Which,
was there, but
we never sent to Gensler.
You know, Gensler does listen to this podcast.
Hopefully. No, but
there was specifically tools, right? So there was phones that were coming out that could support this kind of things. There's new technology, right? Like even my Pixel 2 can do these kind of things, right? So along with the hardware that's available to do it, the manufacturers of those gave you guys the tools needed to make your own applications, right? And you guys immediately took advantage of that, right? And you said you guys had it pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a few weeks in January. Yeah,
a few weeks. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, to think of that someone could say, I'm going to make an AR tool. Now, it's based on some technology, but...
You know, we've spent more than 1 year with the VR applications. Mm. Then
so
it was just a cherry on the cake.
That's awesome.
The problem with these tools, or the beginning of the R&D, is that at the beginning, it took really a lot of time to get from A to B.
Right.
Get from the in-house geeky thing to actually... a product that can be showed on these type of conferences or on a website.
Right.
And now I think we are getting better at this. And then when opportunity comes, we know that we need to, you know, produce something in a few weeks, because someone will, you know, do it before us.
Right.
No, and then that thing happened a lot in recent years, and you know, it's interesting that something comes in, we just buy it, we try to put together a tool for it, and then it's done. Mm. And we just put it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. For example,
nowadays I'm using the word for some guys in the office that we are the children of singularity, technological singularity, because they can do that. I cannot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting. I think it's right, especially, you know, like just simply you saw some of the stuff that Martin Entev from IKEA is doing, right? That's just obvious, mm-hmm. right? People want to know it's not useful to put your Star Wars character on your tabletop, mm-hmm. but it is useful for you to see what's this chair from IKEA going to look like in my living room, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I can see that as what Martin is doing, and I can definitely see how that's going to work. Like, hey, what if I took this wall out of my house mm-hmm. and took it and see what that's going to do, or where is that going to go? And I think those types of tools are going to become important. So
let's grab another example. We've just came back from FMX,
yeah,
and over there were that brilliant speech about how Denis Villeneuve made the shots with the help of an iPad dish
which setup, film
for the Blade Runner,
right?
And there were the shots when he was able to deal with the real time engine and just set up the camera angles. And with the help of our existing knowledge on the AR thing, mm-hmm. In the next months, we would like to have some spare time, 1 or 2 weeks, to put together that kind of stuff and give it to our artists because the
So instead of making cameras in the 3D applications, you can walk around with an iPad.
We have project managers and imagine that the project manager in Archviz business just took the model and figure out, okay, I would like to have that frame and that kind of angle.
The more just thinking about it, it's like, so well, why would you do that? You can just sit at your computer and do it. Now all of a sudden I'm realizing why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's human scale.
Yes.
Right?
That's the point.
The whole point is that it's hard to understand human scale when you're in a 3D application. Mm-hmm. But if you are actual human scale and you can see the distance of things, like, oh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But that was behavior, you know, like you're behaving really.
Absolutely.
The input is different. And that's it. And seeing composition and architecture in really differently.
And the animation will look more natural and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it goes very smart.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course it's fun. You get to walk around the office.
Yeah. It's somehow that's the main reason why we like to do that, because we can be a child in a way in our office, and it makes a lot of fun for us.
You know what I did see though, that was interesting. In one of the first IKEA VR app, did you ever look mm-hmm. at the one where you did the kitchen thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you remember when you could be a child?
Meatball throwing?
No. The meatball throwing is fun. But you could change your scale.
Yes.
And so you suddenly, like a child, and you realized what, and it was right after I did that IKEA experience, I became very, very forgiving for my young son when he spills milk on the counter, because I realize as he's trying to pour cereal, how hard that must be to pour cereal like this, you know, with your arm reached way high. I was like, oh, they keep talking about the empathy thing. I was like, I don't really get that. But at that point, I was like, yeah, that's hard for you to pour milk at that height.
And IKEA is brilliant.
It was cool. I like it. It was a really interesting thing. Well, we're at about an hour, but I can keep talking if you guys want to talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
I want to talk about like what are some of the things you guys see the future of your company and where you want to go on the R&D side as well as your general architecture part of things.
I think we have now a good core, which is, you know, where you can grow side stories. And R&D, of course, one of them. So making tools for architectural visualization industry is something that we have to discover and we have to continue to work on it. So, you know, if I think about this, I would say the brick will be split in different parts. And if we are successful in this, definitely we will have something which is a separate story and doing tools for, mm-hmm. for architectural visualization. We did it before. We had a, in the office a side story as well, focusing on infographical infographic maps and this kind of things for developers. You know, when we see an opportunity, we just you know take it and that company now is contains how many people? Ten-ish people.
Your side company.
It's a separate company, but you know it's grown from Brick.
Right. And, well, how big is Brick overall?
55 people.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, and it's still growing. So this year we will grow like 20-25%.
Wow.
Okay. So yeah, and I think R&D and doing tools, making programs for architectural visualization industries is there is a big opportunity there, and, mm-hmm. and we have a good position, I believe, mm-hmm. to do this properly. The other part is of course education. So you know, we experienced many successful stories inside Brick that junior people became really good artists really quickly because with these easy tools, with easy workflow, basically, if someone has a good eye composition skill or even a good architect, mm-hmm. we can teach them really quickly how to do architectural visualization. And that's the future. You have to, you know, pick up and adapt really quickly, and right. you have to learn this to learn. And then work, and then learn, and then work, mm-hmm. because that's, you know, ArcWiz is depending technologically much. So whatever happens, you have to adapt, and you have to renew your knowledge all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the core business will remain the core business, and we want to focus design communication, mm-hmm. whatever it means that... Right nowadays, we still most of our income is still image architecture portraits,
right?
High quality, high standards. But in the future, I don't know. Most probably, we will do more and more content on alternative products, animations, movies, and of course, VR and AR content. Mm-hmm. And that's the future.
Yeah, I would like to make 360. Stereoscopic movies.
Yeah,
that's the next step that I would like to do.
Okay,
but in a bigger scale, I believe that if we would be able to utilize our processes in a better way, mm-hmm. and work together as a community, I mean, the architectural visualization companies should be merged in a level. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a union or something like that, mm-hmm. it would be very important because in that way, if we look at in a way that what is the selling point over here, the selling point is that we have brilliant applied artists. Right. I mean, not Brick has a lot of brilliant applied artists, but en masse, the architectural visualization is about that. Mm-hmm. And we would like to make better and better products quality-wise, mm-hmm. then sooner or later, those super high quality applied artists should be merged for specific projects, because that will be the way later on. I'm not talking about the next month, I'm talking about late future, but that can be the way to deliver something magnificent, but for that we have to figure out how to have that kind of common understanding, mm-hmm. with the architects and with the architectural visualization companies as well. And it's a, in my point of view, it's an interesting way to think about that whole industry.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be important, and I, you know, in the same way that you guys had to learn from the visual effects industry and apply, adapt the tools that they had to make them work for you, mm-hmm. I think there is going to be opportunity for the ArcVis community could to contribute back to the computer graphics world with some of those new tools that you guys have learned. There's a disparaging view that a lot of VFX people have that ArcVis is inferior to the other things, right? Which is stupid. It's just because you need things faster and simpler doesn't necessarily mean that it's not better, right? Mm-hmm. Having one of the movies I worked on Stealth, they made a shader that had 256 variables in it. That's ridiculous. You don't need that. It's a freaking airplane, right?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And there's no need to make things more complicated than that means if it's more complicated, it's better. It doesn't need to be that way. And you can make really cool and simple tools. And that, I mean, we know that right now from our phones, right? Mm. Our phones are incredibly complex, but they're all about simple interactions. Mm. Right.
Exactly. If you take out, even from VFX, I'm not an expert, but if you take out all the technological things from VFX industry,
right,
you have to check what remains there. It's nothing different from ArcVis.
No, it's not.
Or even, you know, okay, I'm an architect and I like architecture, so I think it's a bigger value, like fundamental
You're right.
value
there. But I think what you can do is you can go back to teach the architect, the bigger graphic CG community, and that includes VFX, everyone, all of them, can learn from what the ArcVis community has done, because I think there's a lot of great technology that has come out of it, right? And you guys have done that. And contribute back, especially VR. Like, my gosh, we need architects. Not only do we need architects to tell people how to interact in VR space, we need architects to freaking design and, you know?
Mm-hmm.
VR is, if it's not done for ArcVis, VR is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen some of these demos? They just don't know how to design spaces. They're bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need people with sensibilities on design spaces.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably the future of architecture, but maybe we go really far away. But I think that's the interesting thing, you know, when architects start to design actually not existing spaces. And it's,
right. VR is a new real estate space.
And imagine that, you know, right now graphic designers or whatever, I'm not an expert again, but I guess on every device, graphics designers working on user experience stuff, put the button here, put the button there.
Right.
Just imagine how complex is this. You need an architect to create proper VR stuff.
Right.
Because you're experiencing the same way as a person, a house, a building.
Right.
You are not living there yet, but sooner or later, maybe.
Yeah.
And it means that you need architects for VR stuff, for designing user interface for VR or spaces in VR. You need architects for that sooner or later.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I would love to go experience a VR space that's designed by, you know, Zaha Hadid architect or, you know, any of those guys. You know, that should be an experience, right? And right now, what I'm getting is not that. Right. And so and there's so much imagination that goes on in architects' minds that can be communicated in VR really well. So that's great. Well, I just realized I have to make sure that we know where we're going. You guys are going to a dinner at some point tonight or something. I've got to do something, but it was great talking to you guys. I'm so happy we can do this. Really, thanks for having the time to do this and to come on and talk about the amazing things you guys are doing. Hungary, which is half of my heritage, and I'm very proud of that. It's really awesome. I think you guys are got a very unique way of looking at things, and it's very clever. So
thanks for inviting us. I think it's a big thing for us to be here and talk on this. So,
And I'll make sure to let you know before it comes out. So anything that you feel you want to share, websites, content, whatever, let me know and we'll put it up on the site as well.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.